Virginia Voice presents part 3 of the Botticelli exhibit at the Muscarelli Museum of Art.
This is the audio description recording of the Botticelli exhibit at the Muscarelli Museum in Williamsburg, Virginia, adapted to read to Virginia Voice by Shirley Canifo Rader. I'm Katie Hennekins.
And I'm Thomas Cunningham.
And we will be your readers. The next stop on our tour is the painting of Minerva and the Centaur. Minerva, also known as Athena. Minerva and the Centaur is one of Botticelli's many paintings that explore the relationship between a man and a woman. This painting shows the woman to have dominance over the man and to be superior in both wisdom and virtue. The setting is bare except for the rusticated masonry stone wall, that of the Pitti Palace, with a heavy overhang that the Centaur is held against by Minerva. Myrtle branches form Minerva's crown and entwine over her chest and arms. They are symbolic of female virtue, further showing her female dominance. The diamonds of Minerva's sheer fabric dress and on the battle axe she is carrying are also representative of virtue. The cluster of 3 diamonds that are shown together on her dress could be representative of the Medici family. Botticelli painted Minerva as a strong sentinel who is completely in control of her situation. She is a woman of virtue, entirely competent of shutting down the evil man-beast next to her. The Centaur appears in sharp contrast. He is known for his lustful desires, as well as his menacing appearance. The Centaur has trespassed on Minerva's land, and he is being brought under control by her. He is a handsome, long-bearded creature, half man, half horse. He is carrying a long bow. The arrows in his quiver are resting behind him on the horse part of his body. It is being held by a red cord. Minerva has him grabbed by the hair, pressing him against the wall. He is not happy. The rough rock wall next to him helps portray his wild and beastly appearance. Minerva, who represents wisdom and intelligence, has gained victory over the sinful ways of the Centaur and clearly shows her triumph by easily grasping him by the head. This painting was hung in the bedchamber of a Medici bride, right next to the Primavera. The meaning Botticelli was portraying was that women have great power to tame the wild and lustful male.
And now for the final stop in our museum exhibition, we come to Venus. But don't worry. Our audio exhibition will continue afterwards. Venus was painted between 1484 and 1490, tempera on wood panel. It's found in the Turin Savadua Gallery. Botticelli had portrayed Venus standing in a narrow stone parapet, silhouetted against a black background strongly lit from the right to evoke a sculpture. She is naked, as the Roman goddess often is, except for a transparent sleeved garment with a square neckline that opens just below her bust. Her shoulders, rather than crossing her torso, as in a classical statue, descend to her arms in the same stream of movement as her floating hair. Her long neck is tilted to the left side. Her skin looks flawless, her face free of any marks. Her light-colored hair falls past her shoulders, barely touching her breasts. The use of the timeless Venus modest pose of her hands identifies her as the Aphrodite Venus goddess of love and connects the painting with its source, the birth of Venus painted by Botticelli around 1484. This isolated Venus, as Sir Kenneth Clark has pointed out, is probably representative of the kinds of paintings that were destroyed in the 2 bonfires of the Vanities organized by Savonarola in 1497 and 1498. This Venus and another similar Venus in the Berlin Museum have been attributed directly to Botticelli in the past. Most authorities today regard them as painted by the artist's assistants under his supervision. The sensuous beauty of Botticelli's Venus, when considered with her modest pose, was intended to express the dual nature of love, both sacred and profane. The pose of Botticelli's Venus is reminiscent of the Venus de' Medici, a marble sculpture from classical antiquity in the Medici collection, which Botticelli had the opportunity to study. The figure of Venus is also similar to Praxiteles' sculpture of Aphrodite. In this version of her birth, where she rises from the sea, she is already a grown woman. The muse for the Venus was Simonetta Cataneo Vespucci, a married noblewoman who, it is said, Botticelli loved. She was considered the most beautiful woman in Florence. She died at the age of 22 in 1476. Botticelli is buried at her feet in the Church of the Ognissanti, the Church of All Saints. Venus is the model for our next painting, The Birth of Venus.
The Birth of Venus. An introduction. Before considering the subject matter, it is important we take note of the medium. This is a work of tempera on canvas. During this time, wood panels were popular surfaces for painting, and they would remain popular through the end of the 16th century. Canvases, however, started to gain acceptance by painters. Canvas worked well in humid regions such as Venice, because wooden panels tended to warp in such climates. Canvas also cost less than wood, but it was considered to be less formal, which made it more appropriate for paintings that would be shown in non-official locations, such as countryside villas rather than urban palaces. The theme of the birth of Venus was taken from the writings of the ancient poet Homer. According to the traditional account, after Venus was born, she rode on a seashell and sea-foamed to the island of Cythera. In the painting we see here, Venus is prominently depicted in the center, born out of the foam as she rides to shore. On the left, the figure of Zephyrus carries the nymph Chloris, alternatively identified as Aura, as he blows the wind to guide Venus. On shore, a figure who has been identified as Pomona, or as the goddess of spring, waits for Venus with mantle in hand. The mantle billows in the wind from Zephyrus' mouth. The composition is similar in some respects to that of the Primavera that we will see after this. Venus is slightly to right of center, and she is isolated against the background so no other figures overlap her. She has a slight tilt of the head, and she leans in an awkward contrapposto-like stance. Botticelli paid much attention to her hair and hairstyle, which reflected his interest in the way women wore their long hair in the 15th century. He gave Venus an idealized face, which is remarkably free of blemishes, and beautifully shaded her face to distinguish a lighter side and a more shaded side. Of obvious importance in this painting is the nudity of Venus. The depiction of nude women was not something normally done in the Middle Ages, with a few exceptions in special circumstances. For the modeling of this figure, Botticelli turned to an Aphrodite statue, such as the Aphrodite of Cnidos, in which the goddess attempts to cover herself in a gesture of modesty. In painting Venus, Botticelli painted a dark line around the contours of her body. This made it easier to see her bodily forms against the background, and it also emphasized the color of her milky skin. The result of all of this is that Venus almost looks like her flesh is made out of marble, underscoring the sculpturesque nature of her body. There are many stories about Aphrodite's birth, but two stand out. It is said that Aphrodite was born from the members of Uranus after his amputation by Cronos. The sea kept for very long the celestial members inside her infinite body. Foam formed around them, and through the foam the gorgeous Aphrodite emerged. Zephyr transported her upon a giant seashell for a long time through the immense ocean. During this journey, the strange ship of Aphrodite passed through Cythera and went to Cyprus. The beautiful goddess descended on the island, and everywhere she stepped, colorful and fragrant flowers sprouted. From the places the goddess of beauty traveled after her birth, she was named Cytherea and Cypriot. The most prevalent myth about her origin is that she was born on the coast of Cyprus. From there, the wind Zephyrus, with a gentle gust, pushed her to the sea, into the white-crested waves. Aphrodite was greeted by the seasons that dressed and adorned her. She wore inlaid floral dresses from purple, silk, and other shiny fabric. They plaited her rich, braided hair and pinned in the braids beautiful gold buckles. They adorned her glowing white neck with precious necklaces made of emeralds and rubies. Finally, they placed pearl earrings on her ears. Then they transferred Aphrodite to Olympus and presented her to Zeus and the other gods. Everyone admired her, were dazzled by her beauty, and gave her countless compliments, wanting to make her their wife. The name Aphrodite indicates her birth from the sea foam. Aphros in the Greek language is foam. When you think of Aphrodite, you think of Botticelli's beautiful, white-skinned, red-haired goddess sailing to shore on a shell. The title of the Birth of Venus can be traced back to the 16th century. What is depicted here is not, however, the moment of the goddess's birth. The classical poet Hesiod describes her as rising from the sea foam after Cronos cut off his father Uranus's penis and threw it into the ocean. Instead, here we see the moment she comes ashore. Inspired by classical tradition, Botticelli's contemporary Angelo Poliziano described this scene in his epic poem Stanze per la Giostra, thereby providing what was probably the most important source of inspiration for the painting. He described Venus as being driven toward shore on a shell by Zephyr, and how an onlooker would have seen the flash in the goddess's eye and the seasons standing on the shore in their white garments and their flowing hair caressed by the wind. The gods of the wind, Zephyr, and the breeze, Aura, are in a tight embrace and are gently driving Venus toward shore on their breath. She is standing naked on a golden, shining shell, which reaches the shore floating on rippling waves. Venus rises with her marble-colored carnations above the ocean next to her, like a statue. Her hair, which is playfully fluttering around her face in the wind, is given a particularly fine sheen by the use of fine golden strokes. The unapproachable gaze under heavy lids gives the goddess an air of cool distance. The rose is supposed to have flowered for the first time when Venus was born. For that reason, gentle rose-colored flowers are billowing around Zephyr and Aura in the wind. Botticelli's art was never fully committed to naturalism. He seldom gave weight and volume to his figures, and rarely used deep perspectival space. The painting description is laid out from right to left in three horizontal sections. The colors are like water with cool tints. There are four characters in the painting. They are in front of a background of water. Small flowers are drifting toward Venus, who stands in the middle. There are some trees to the right side behind one of the characters. We will start in the middle of the canvas. Venus stands in the center in a large scallop shell. Her body is anatomically improbable, with an elongated neck and torso. Her pose is likewise impossible. She stands in a classic contrapposto stance, but her weight is shifted too far over the left leg for the pose to be held, positioning on the edge of the scallop shell. It would certainly tip over were it real. She is nude, but she is holding her long, light-colored red hair with her right hand in front of her to cover her vulva, and her left hand is covering her breasts. On the viewer's left, there are two figures representing Zephyrus, god of winds, carrying with him the gentle breeze Aura as together they blow Venus, the goddess of love, ashore. They are covered with long scarves. The goddess of seasons is waiting to receive Venus and sends flowers and holds out a robe covered with flowers to receive her. She is wearing a long sheer dress with small flowers on it. Her hair is long and the same color as Venus. It is clear that this is a fantasy image. This version of the birth of Venus shows her as rising from the sea, already a fully grown woman. Since classical antiquity, the seashell has been given a metaphor for the woman's vulva. The high modeling of the white shimmering flesh color gives Venus the appearance of a statue. Botticelli has gone over the contours with a black line, causing them to stand out sharply from the surface of the painting and lending them a curious coldness and clarity. The nude female body, forbidden territory for a painter, is shown by Botticelli with his trademark elongation. Venus is reborn in Italy, bringing hopes to mankind.
Primavera, circa 1492, an introduction. In 1550, Vasari wrote that a picture, which according to him announced the arrival of spring, was in the Medici Villa in Castello, In 1477, the estate was acquired by Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco de' Medici, who was a second cousin of Lorenzo the Magnificent. This is why it was long assumed that the Primavera, spring, as the painting continues to be called, was painted by the 14-year-old Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco when the villa was bought. An inventory dating from 1499, which was not discovered until 1975, lists the property of Lorenzo and his brother Giovanni and states that in the 15th century, the Primavera had been displayed in Florence's city palace. The painting decorated an anteroom attached to Lorenzo de Pierfrancesco's chambers. Such large format paintings were nothing new in high-ranking private residences. The Primavera is, however, special in that it is one of the first surviving paintings from the post-classical period, which depicts classical gods almost naked and life-size. Some of the figures are based on ancient sculptures. These are, however, not direct copies, but are translated in Botticelli's own unconventional format. Slender figures whose bodies at times seem slightly too long. Above all, it is the woman's domed stomachs that demonstrate the contemporary ideal of beauty. La Primavera, the allegory of spring. Medium tempera on poplar panel. Genre, mythological, allegorical, history painting. Movement, early Renaissance art. Found in the Uffizi Gallery of Florence. This wonderful and famous work of art by great Botticelli was painted for Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco de' Medici, a cousin of Lorenzo the Magnificent. The Medici was a very important Florentine banking family and later royal house of Tuscany. Critics are divided over the date of the work. Anyway, it was certainly painted between 1477 and 1482. I will use the clock's hands to identify the space. The painting description is laid out from views right to left. The entire canvas is covered with eight characters in front of a wooded area of orange trees. There are oranges on the trees and on the ground. The Primavera, or the allegory of spring, is full of allegorical meanings whose interpretation is difficult and still uncertain. Suspended in the air, on the right, Zephyrus, a blue-faced young man, chases Flora, on the left of him, who is wearing a sheer white dress and has a blossom in her mouth, and blows her with the breath. Flora transforms into spring, the elegant woman scattering her flowers over the world. Venus, in the middle, represents the humanitas, the benevolence, which protects men. She is wearing a white gown that drapes closely to her body and is carrying a red, long scarf. On the left, the three graces dance in their very sheer gowns, and Mercury clears away the clouds. Venus. In the center of the painting is depicted as an idealized woman, slightly off-center, with her head tilted and gesturing to her right. Above her is a blindfolded Cupid, her son, and behind him the tree limbs form an arch, which conveniently frame Venus and provide her with a privileged position in the painting. To the far left, Mercury, the god of the month of May, has his staff, which he may be using to usher away the winter clouds. He is readily identifiable by his prominent winged sandals. To the right of Mercury is an important group called the Three Graces. These women, who appear to be involved in some type of dance, were modeled by Botticelli after an ancient depiction of the Three Graces. These figures are important because they represent the feminine virtues of chastity, beauty, and love, all of which point to romance and provide us with some context in terms of what's going on in the painting. We can see the pearls of their heads, which symbolize this type of purity. Their clothing is like lace, very light and see-through, which demonstrates Botticelli's virtuosity in depicting such kinds of fabric. It is interesting to see that they are being targeted by Cupid's arrow, which reinforces the idea of marriage. On the right side, we see another group of figures, which includes that of Zephyrus, the West Wind, about to take a nymph named Chloris. After he succeeds in taking her for his own, they are married, and Chloris transforms into Flora, the spring goddess. Here, Flora is depicted throwing flowers that have been gathered in her dress. This is a means of symbolizing both springtime and fertility. Taking the scene as a whole, it is probably best understood in the light of an allegorical meaning. The allusions to spring and the month of May, the scene of a suitor's pursuit, the three graces, all of these point to the idea of a springtime marriage. The setting is an orange grove, which is also noteworthy, since the Medici had adopted the orange tree as its family symbol. The painting would have been placed in Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco's bedroom, and his wife would have seen it for the first time after their wedding. So the idea of Cupid targeting the pure three graces with his arrow takes on a particular meaning in the light of a conjugal love. In any case, the painting is a testament to the humanist interests in classical subject matter in the Renaissance, as well as the courtly desire for lavish themes and graceful figures. The allegory of spring is a very refined work of art. The naturalistic details of the meadow, there are hundreds of types of flowers. The skillful use of the color, the elegance of the figures, and the poetry of the whole have made this important and fascinating work celebrated all over the world. Leaving out the many possible interpretations proposed by various experts, what is certain is the humanistic meaning of the work. Venus is the goodwill, the humanitas, as she distinguishes the material on the right from the spiritual values on the left. The humanitas promotes the ideal of a positive man, confident in his abilities and sensitive to the needs of others. The Neoplatonic conception of the ideal beauty and the absolute love influenced the Renaissance culture and Botticelli. We can therefore imagine that behind the philosophical interpretation of the painting, Botticelli and his client thought of an apology for the Medici and their sophisticated, far-sighted, and deep love for culture and art. One of the first things we should note is that little is used in terms of perspective. While some atmospheric perspective is visible through the trees to the right and to the left, we do not see the one-point linear perspective here, which some of the early Renaissance masters had used so effectively in the 15th century. Also, note how most of the figures have limbs, which are long and slender, and appear rather elegant. Botticelli produced art at a time when there was a demand in the court of Florence for this type of work.
This concludes the audio description tour of the Botticelli exhibit at the Muscarelli Museum of Art. Some of the information on the paintings were taken from notes at the Muscarelli Museum of Art, College of William and Mary, Williamsburg, Virginia. Thank you.